Hello, everyone, and welcome to Twitter Spaces about life and social change in Central Asia. It is hosted by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and is moderated by me, Bermet Talant. Today, we will be talking about changing attitudes and policies towards the Russian language in Central Asia. The number of Russian speakers in the region has indeed declined since the disintegration of the Soviet Union, mostly for natural reasons, such as the migration of ethnic Russians and the population growth in the dominant ethnic groups. But Russian remains strong, especially in cities. It is still the language of education, science, services, and often official paperwork. And many parents still believe that their children have better chances to succeed in life knowing Russian than, let's say, Kyrgyz. These linguistic divisions between people of the same nationality and even ethnicity have led to cultural clashes and resentment over unequal opportunities and discrimination. And in the light of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the language debate has taken a whole new meaning, pushing some to prioritize their native languages. Joining us today are Isatay Minuarov, a sociologist from Kazakhstan, Biktur Iskender, a journalist from Kyrgyzstan and a co-founder of a well-known news website, Klop, and Sivara Hamidova, a women's rights activist from Uzbekistan. But before we continue, if you have a question or a comment, you can send a direct message to @RFERL or reply to a tweet pinned in this Twitter Spaces. Or a third way, you can indicate that you want to speak by pressing the button in Twitter Spaces on your mobile app. Just make sure that your mic is working. Isatay, I would like to start with you.
Yeah.
Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
The war in Ukraine hit particularly close to home in Kazakhstan, given the shared border with Russia. Has the interest to Kazakh language increased since then?
Oh, yeah. Hello, everyone. My name is Isatay. I represent Kazakhstan, work as a sociologist. Have been working for different think tanks in Kazakhstan as an observer, insider, or analyst who's been focusing on the nation-building project because it's of significant interest for me as a researcher. As a Kazakhstani who speaks both Kazakh and Russian languages, I can see sentiments emanating from both camps. So yeah, there are different, major changes. I think there's a shift going on with regards to the linguistic policy. And I would like to look from the political perspective rather than let's say pop culture or social media activism, and touch upon some top-down and bottom-up developments in Kazakhstan. First off, I'd like to make it clear that the use of the Russian language is not on the decline in Kazakhstan, but rather keeping its status quo. But at the same time, we are seeing the unprecedented rise of the popularity of the Kazakh language, both de facto and de jure. So canceling Russian culture or language is not the case in our country. Statements about waning popularity of the Russian language after the events unfolding in Ukraine are not actually true. So I think the Russian language is not affected, but I live in Nur-Sultan City and Almaty. I visit Almaty quite a lot, and I think we also have a new generation. It's like a contradiction, interesting contradiction in Kazakhstan, that in the southern parts of the country, which has nothing, no borders with Russia, we are seeing a new generation speaking no Russian. We also have in Astana, for example, in the northern parts bordering with Russia, a new generation speaking only Russian. So this kind of a paradoxical things happening in Kazakhstan.
Why do you think it's happening?
I think there is because the government's practices and policies are favoring both Kazakh and language. I think I need to argue that there is a politics, there is a policy favoring Kazakh language, but it's more implicit than rather than explicit. So there is a top-down policy that is favoring Kazakh language, which is which can be reflected in an official program aimed at developing the Kazakh language. So I think the government, the official document outlines the concrete deadlines and the steps. That is, for example, there was a program, the concept of language linguistic planning, which set out the aim of reaching an indicator of 95% of the population should speak Kazakh by 2020. But I think it has failed, given the fact that the government has again implemented developed a new program with the same objectives, but with more focus on Kazakh language.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a little mention of the Russian language.
Okay, so what are the steps and measures that are being implemented?
For example, the government developed the program developed just recently in 2020 says that the share of the adult population fluent in the Kazakh language should make up 95% by 2025. And they say that the share of the school graduates speaking Kazakh language should constitute 100%, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there is an interesting development. For example, on the part of the politicians and the political figures, there was an interesting case recently. A group of Majlis members, Majlis is Kazakhstan's lower chamber of the parliament, 36 parliament members initiated the idea of removing Russian language from the constitution. Kazbek Issa, if a former journalist, if memory serves, who is currently representing Ak-Jol Party, the second party in the parliament, and a representing informal group of Natspat people, national patriots. So he's regarded to be a figure who represents in the parliament the Natspat figures, people. He said that he and along with his 35 fellow Majlis men, pushing forward the idea of removing the Russian language from the constitution, and they changed the wording. In Kazakhstan's constitution, Russian language has an official status, not the state one. The only state language is Kazakh language, while Russian language has the official language, but it can be used along with, on par with, on an equal basis like Kazakh.
Mm-hmm.
So they were trying to deliver the message that, well, we gotta get rid of this language in the wording in the constitution, and we ask the parliament and the president of our country remove the official status of the Russian language.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not surprising that nothing happened. It resulted in nothing.
But there was a petition, right, recently.
Oh yeah. The interesting, I was going to talk about that as well. A petition launched back in February on, if memory serves, it was February 28th. So I've been keeping an eye on this, the growing number of those who signed that. So the petition launched stated that the same objective. So they wanted to get rid of that.
Mm-hmm.
They asked them not to confuse patriotism with nationalism. They said that the Russian language should be in Kazakhstan. Russian language should be treated as a foreign language like English. So it should be taught in kindergarten. It shouldn't go beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
in Kazakhstan, we only have Kazakh language. So since then, the petition, I think the I just looked up today. So it has garnered almost 500,000. Signatures since then.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a huge development. So it will result in nothing, but I think it indicates some major bottom-up changes in Kazakhstan's linguistic landscape, and also the fact that the government, the parliament members have appealed to the public through media is indicative of in 2000. Sorry for taking time, but I also mentioned I would like to mention the case back in 2020, right before pandemic hit the world. A group of Kazakh intelligentsia members, 700, over 700 Kazakh intelligentsia members. It's like poets, writers, publishers, media persons, well-respected Kazakh-speaking intelligentsia members. They published a open letter that we call the Открытое письмо, президенту, open letter to President Tokayev, asking to remove the Russian language, same objective, and they oblige every citizen to know the Kazakh language. So, but the fact that the parliament members are appealing is since that, I think right until the parliament members appeal, it was the channels through which these appeals were translated were unofficial channels that resulted in nothing. But the fact that parliament members are openly, plainly appealing and translating these sort of things is indicative of the changes. But
I would like to get back to talking about the official status a bit later. I want to bring in Biktur.
All right.
Biktur, let's go back to October 2020 when protests erupted in Bishkek over the rigged parliamentary elections. And now President Sadir Japarov was freed from prison by his supporters. At the height of his power grab, you tweeted, "City residents, let's learn Kyrgyz and not be shy to speak it with an accent. Let's take down the communication barriers in our country, which are sky high." Could you explain that? What was the turning point for you at that time?
I think there was no like single turning point. Do you hear me well, by the way?
Yes.
Sorry, I think my voice is very bad these days because I spoke too much during the last 3 days. So excuse me for that. There was no single turning point. I think it was gradually kind of coming to me. And maybe the revolution that we had in 2020, it was important in finally understanding, you know, that we actually need to do that. And maybe it can be called a turning point. I think, you know, like there was one moment which made me actually write this tweet. It was when Sadir Japarov was greeted by people who were protesting, you know, during the October protests in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And then people in Bishkek would say, like, why the hell is it going on? Like, well, who is Japarov? Like, why is he so popular? Because it seemed like they completely misunderstood how actually important he as a political figure had become while he was imprisoned, you know, while he was organizing his protest, Kumtor protest in 2013, because most of it was happening in Kyrgyz language. And that's why it did not really enter the Russian language bubble of Bishkek. And that's very specific for Kyrgyzstan, because we have this, you know, a real kind of linguistic bubble, which is most of the capital, or I would say the privileged part of the capital. And then we have the rest of the country, and the processes which are going on there are quite often completely missed out by, you know, basically the most privileged part of the population and also the richest part of the population, if we don't include corruption, corrupt officials and organized crime leaders. So, yeah, and that's why I was seeing this surprise by people in Bishkek. And at the same time, I was seeing how this lack of dialogue, this huge language barrier that exists in Kyrgyzstan, actually, you know, sometimes is really not letting us to find, you know, a good solution about how we want to see our country developing in the future. And I would, you know, I'd be happy to change this if I can. And one of the ways I think to change it is to actually, for people in Bishkek to make the step by learning Kyrgyz language. not, you know, forcing people from outside of Bishkek learn Russian, because I think we've gone through this colonial method before. Didn't end well. So that's why I think, yes, it should be people from the privileged, more privileged part of the country who should make a first step by learning the language that is actually much more popular in Kyrgyzstan.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also why it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Was your experience of learning Kyrgyz successful or not after all, and why?
No, it was not, unfortunately, and I'm very unhappy about it. I think I'm too lazy, and I can find many, you know, excuses,
mm-hmm.
Which is, again, a very typical thing for a Bishkek-born, Russian-speaking Kyrgyz person. The answer is, unfortunately, no. I'm working on it,
mm-hmm.
and I've been promising to work on it for like 20 years now, but I'm trying my best, really.
Mm-hmm. You're one of those people who believe that as a post-colonial language, Russian doesn't belong to Russia only, and you've written about it in the same way as English or French don't belong to England and France anymore. Do you still hold those views even after the war in Ukraine started?
I do, although my views have been changing, especially my views about language. They have gone through significant changes during the last 2 years, I guess, especially, or maybe even more. And yes, the war in Ukraine that started in 2014 was one of the drivers of this change. Because, you know, like, I mean, earlier in my life, I would be one of those, you know, defenders, actually, of the Russian language. But I saw it through the prism of a minority language in Kyrgyzstan. And I think when you have a limited kind of view on what Kyrgyzstan is, when you kind of single out Kyrgyzstan without the historical context, without the colonial context, then Russian really kind of looks like a minority language which should be preserved and defended. And that's how it sounded logical to me when I was, for example, in my 20s. Again, being born in a very Russian language community, I was feeling like a minority in my country. But then exploring more, learning more, especially, you know, when this neo-colonization started by Russia, and seeing the war in Ukraine myself, that was a very important eye-opener for me, I guess. And that's when I started rethinking my views on Russian language and which role should it have in Kyrgyzstan. And since then, I'm rooting more and more, and every year it's stronger, for, you know, having Kyrgyz and other indigenous languages of Kyrgyzstan, including Uzbek, as main languages of communication in our own country. I think it now I believe it will be very helpful for us. But I mean, at the same time, it is inevitable that we will have to use Russian, at least to communicate with, you know, people from the same post-colonial region, to communicate with, you know, people from, I don't know, Eastern Europe, for example. It's difficult for everyone of us to learn all the languages of every one of us. You know, if we talk about cooperation between Ukrainians, Belarusians, I don't know, Azerbaijanis, Uzbeks, Kyrgyz, Kazakhs, you know, it's practically right now easier for us to use Russian because it would be the most popular common language between all of us. And yes, it is a colonial legacy, but we can maybe use it against our common threat, which is Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we should still use this as much as we can for our advantage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. I just want to remind that we're going to take questions and comments in the end. You can send a direct message to @RFERL or reply to a tweet that is pinned in this Twitter Spaces. Or you can just press the button in Twitter Spaces and indicate that you want to speak. Sivara, I would like to bring you in into the conversation. I've always been under the impression that Uzbekistan was less Russified compared to Kyrgyzstan or Kazakhstan. What Isata and Viktor were talking about, does that sound relatable to you as an Uzbek citizen in Tashkent? Is it becoming harder to not know Uzbek language?
Hi. Basically, yeah, I agree with Biktura that, the Russian language here in Uzbekistan is also considered as a language of minority. And at some point, I guess in 90s, even there were like a very harsh, hard policies that were allowing the government to shut down Russian schools, for instance, or they cut the numbers of university programs in Russian language. So there was a quite a huge turn to Uzbek language, and not only Uzbek language development, but also to the change of the alphabet from Cyrillic to Latin. Which I guess made lots of complications in Uzbek language development. So basically, the government changed the alphabet, and many people they were kind of not able to learn anymore the language because there were no books available, no resources in a new language, let's say. So it created a vacuum in learning Uzbek language itself. Along with that, I guess the big problems were as well in discussions, lots of debates were regarding the making all official documents in Uzbek language, which were the last 5 years, I guess, just on the political agenda. But at the same time, it's still impossible because of this kind of clash of people that not able to use Latin alphabet. Like some people, like older generations, let's say, they only kind of can write everything in Cyrillic or cannot write at all. And especially in rural areas, it's very hard. There are almost no Russian-speaking people, but also no people who are able to speak in Uzbek, in a normal literature Uzbek language. And this all at the moment, it's it seems very complicated because also many human resources, let's say, when you try to find somebody who speaks proper Uzbek language, let's say, you cannot find such people. It's very difficult in the country. But at the same time, you cannot find people who speak proper Russian language in many regions. And it's all creates the questions about the dominance of the language. Basically, what kind of language do we speak? So when the government shut down Russian language, but didn't make enough efforts to develop Uzbek language, it just made all this paradoxical situation that we are at the moment.
And so people, I suppose, because of these kind of linguistic and informational vacuum, people are sticking to Russian because it's convenient, right? Or
There are just few factors, I guess, why people would prefer to stick to Russian. I guess this who the minority of people who were speaking Russian, they would still prefer the language because when you try to learn Uzbek, I myself Russian speaking. And to me, that was very difficult to find any educational program to learn Uzbek. When you try to find it, you cannot find the proper school that would teach you Uzbek language as native. And this is one of the factors why Russian is more preferable. And but at the same time, English is becoming more and more popular among Uzbek speaking people who kind of find it difficult to learn Russian, let's say. And I guess English would become even more popular because in many universities now, to get a grant or to get a place in a good university, you need to pass English exam, not Russian. And this is what changing, I guess. There is another one is a religious factor as well that making Russian as well not so popular, but I wouldn't say that the war in Ukraine influenced in any way the popularity of Russian language, but more internal factors that are making Russian less and less preferable.
I see. We have a question that has been sent to at RFERL. And Isatai, I think you'll be the best to answer it. Do you think Russian will be stripped of its official status in Kazakhstan or Kyrgyzstan in any foreseeable future?
No way, because I'll explain why. I think it's been since the early days of Ukraine. Kazakhstan. Kazakhstan's linguistic policy has been designed to, it's been regarded as dualistic or hybridized, favoring both Russian and Kazakh. But for Kazakhstanis, for the government itself, especially after the Ukrainian case, I think it will be the issue is it's too fragile to remove the Russian language from the constitution, as it's the issue of national security. But I think the nation building project, which includes the promotion of Kazakh culture, the Kazakhization project of the northern part of the country, is going to be reinforced and accelerated, but it will not affect the Russian language. Russian language is linguistic policy in Kazakhstan is too fragile to do so, given that we have 20% of the population are Slavic, and there are also Russian-speaking Kazakhs. And the cultural divide still remains as a stumbling block in our country. That's why removing, excluding Russian language from the constitution, it's the matter of, I think, national security. Also, even Nazarbayev, I remember in 2015, I guess, during the meeting with Ассамблея народа Казахстана, there is an official institution in Kazakhstan that is regarded as an umbrella for different ethnic groups and aimed that was designed to promote their cultures, to preserve their cultures. So there is an annual meeting on April for almost 30 years. It was designed by Nazarbayev, who said in 2015 that if we remove the Russian language from the constitution, we will follow the Ukrainian footsteps, which hinting that it might trigger clashes and huge problems for Kazakhstan. And even though Nazarbayev's rhetoric was context-based, the interesting thing is that he always used to adopt his narrative depending on the audience. For instance, if we meet with the Russian speakers or the INK people, like Assembly of People of Kazakhstan, he mentions the need to preserve Russian language as an inter-ethnic language in Kazakhstan. While if he meets with the Kazakh audience, solely Kazakh audience, Nazarbayev refers to the colonial past and the colonial, he employs the colonial narrative. And no significant change since then in terms of the rhetoric of the leader of the country. Tokayev also mentions and highlights the fact that any incidents and attempts to undermine our stability will be prosecuted. And the government also makes it clear that it will crack down on any attempts to destabilize the situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think our nation building project and the process will be changing along with the social demographic changes in Kazakhstan. So for now, Kazakhstan, the Kazakh ethnic group constitutes 70% of the population, which is a major change. And I think once it reaches, I guess, 80% or 90% of the total population, I think there will be some revisions of the national policy. But for now, Russian language will not be affected in any way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just as a side note, even before the war in Ukraine, any initiatives to raise the profile of national languages in Central Asia would be met with criticism and even outward hostility from the Kremlin officials, right? They would always react with like calling it xenophobia and nationalism. So yeah, it is a politically sensitive question. We're running a little bit over time, but there is another question. And I think Sivara and Biktur, you probably will be good to answer it. So there are generations of Kyrgyz and Kazakhs who grew up, and Uzbeks who grew up speaking Russian as their only language, and they're always shamed for not knowing their mother tongue. But on the other hand, there are young people who move from rural areas to the city in pursuit of education and work, but find themselves in a linguistic minority, unable to get services in their native language or even being looked down at as second-class citizens. Do you have any ideas how we can bridge that division?
Yeah, I guess I will try to answer this question as well. To me, like growing up, like, yeah, I was in different situation, like throughout like different decades. There was a decade when people would shame you for not knowing Uzbek language and like speaking Russian and consider you not as a second class, but as something that is you are not Uzbek, let's say. So you don't belong here. But at the same time, there was a time when Russian became more popular because of the lots of migrants went to Russia and they were forced to learn Russian to pass the exam to receive the permit to work in Russia. So it was different attitude in society as well, because the society was dependent on these migrants as well. And I guess the answer would be that like both Russian and Uzbek speaking people, they should be treated equally in the country, and there should be a freedom of choice of like what language to use, you know, because if you're born with some language, like you cannot be shamed for not knowing a different one. And in upcoming years, probably Russian would still remain the question of kind of like spoken in cities. So that's why like whoever come to the big cities, they either like bilingual or just trying to understand each other like by communicating in the language that they can explain. So probably there is no like one right answer or how to solve it, but that what I can foresee like in Uzbekistan at least.
Yeah, Biktur, what do you think about this resentment that exists in societies on both sides?
I think what Sivara says, and she used, you know, the very a word that I was also thinking of, shaming, you know, is unfortunately such a huge part of our interlinguistic kind of, you know, relationship within our country. It happened both against people who would come to the capital not speaking well, you know, good Russian, and being shamed for speaking with an accent, or, you know, speaking their native language, which is Kyrgyz in Kyrgyzstan for most people, or Uzbek. And shaming is also happening the other way around. I mean, like for me, I guess when I was a kid, for me, the largest barrier back then was actually being shamed for my attempts to speak Kyrgyz, because, you know, some people, grown-ups actually, which was especially sad, thought that I spoke a funny kind of version of Kyrgyz, which sounded like Russian or whatever. And I mean, it created such a huge, how do I say this? Like I was so shy, you know, to speak Kyrgyz after that, that it was one of the major kind of, it created one of these major gaps that I had in my Kyrgyz language kind of understanding, education and whatever. So I think, as I said in the beginning, one of the ways to fill this gap or to eliminate this gap which exists within our society is for people in Bishkek to learn Kyrgyz. I think this is the step that should be done, not the other way around. But before doing that, we should address the issue of shaming. We should address, you know, it to also Kyrgyz language people, that it should become very uncool to make fun of people who speak Kyrgyz with an accent or who start learning Kyrgyz, even if they are ethnic Kyrgyz. And I don't know exactly how to do that. I mean, it probably requires a lot of educational work, a lot of media work. But that's you know, something that I would love to address. I dream, you know, to see Kyrgyzstan where Russian-speaking people living in Bishkek, including ethnic Kyrgyz Russian-speaking people living in Bishkek, are not afraid to start speaking bad Kyrgyz at the beginning, because you would never be able to learn Kyrgyz without, you know, going through this stage of speaking very bad Kyrgyz. I learned Ukrainian, which probably not many people know, but I speak Ukrainian, and, you know, it's so weird that my Ukrainian today is better than my Kyrgyz. But the thing is, when I learned Ukrainian, which I learned without actually attending any courses, I was supported a lot by my Ukrainian friends, and they were very patient listening to my bad Ukrainian first, which lasted for actually a couple of years, I guess. That gave me much more confidence, you know, to learn it better. And and that's what we should work on. We should, you know, build the conditions which will make Russian-speaking people much more confident when they start learning Kyrgyz. And when we do that, this will be a huge game changer, I think, in our country. Mm-hmm. A positive one.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we have to wrap up because we're running a little bit over time. But thanks to the speakers and listeners for joining this Twitter Spaces today, and to RFERL for hosting it. And if you have any feedback or suggestions for topics, you can DM me or RFERL. Have a good day, and chong rahmat.